This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 812, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you, boosted, thoughtful, helping other people, doing what you can, and getting by. Keep doing your thing.
Well, it's a vile world, but that's okay. That's where the smart thoughts are today. Tortoise shells and a wedding ring. So much for the little king.
Hey, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 812. I'm Josh Flanagan, and joining us in the honorary second chair in place of a much beloved and missed Connor Kilpatrick is Dr. Ryan Haupt.
I mean, we still keep a third chair available for him, working to appear.
Like the Passover thing. Is it Passover?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Save room for Elijah.
Elijah, that's what it was.
You were going to say Ezekiel?
I was. Oh, I was going to do that. And for people listening out there, are you a giant anti-Semite, Josh? No, I'm not. My whole mother-in-law family, they're all Jewish, but I can't seem to remember the details of it. But fact is,
I was raised very religious, so there you go. That's...
We don't go to most of those events.
But yet we still have the empty chair, just in case. And some salt water and parsley to mimic the tears of missing Connor.
You should have seen how confused I was at my wedding when the horror started. Not a joke. And Lindsay is like, just do it and have fun. And I was like, I literally don't know what's going on. And these people are dropping me from this chair. That's a real thing that happened. We are iFanboy. Every week we skirt the edge of unacceptable things to say. And one of us picks the book they like best from all the stack of comics. We call that the pick of the week. We will talk about... I script bombed Connor last week. And it's still here, and I just script-bombed myself retroactively.
Hey, there you go. That's fun.
As the script says, oh, dear God, when will this ever end? Why won't this end? Please make it stop. What have we done to anger you? Oh, Lord, please kill me.
By Crom, you're right.
We're going to talk about the pick of the week. We're going to talk about the other books for the week. We'll talk about the patron book. Pick. We will answer some listener mail if we have time. It's a good time. It's fun. There will be spoilers, so if you haven't read the books we're talking about, then you will probably be fine, but don't get pissy if you get something spoiled.
The science suggests that being spoiled actually increases your enjoyment of media, not decreases.
Well, that's not how I felt about Game of Thrones and social media.
But, and yet, the science disagrees.
Well, how do we know these people? I don't know. I don't even know what the pseudo rationalization of that is. Ryan, you had the pick.
I did have the pick, and the pick this week, as you might have intuited by me referring to our Lord and Savior Crom, was King Conan number 2 by Jason Aaron, art by Mahmoud Aswar. Colors by Matthew Wilson, letters by Travis Lantham. And Josh, I understand you're also reading this book, but before we get into the discussion, I think Jace, I mentioned this in a text thread and got shut down quickly because we're saving it for the show. I think Jason Aaron's working some stuff out about fatherhood and getting older And those are two things I can relate to hard right now. And doing it through a Conan book is as good a place as any. And I just, I dug every page of this.
Yeah, I, when looking through my stack of things that I have to catch up on over the holidays, at some point I noticed this week King Conan number 2, and I said, well, what was this? And I saw Jason Aaron's name. I was like, well, what would that happen? And so I went back and I found number 1 and I read it. And I got through that and I just thought, oh. And I remembered that, you know, like, oh, he's made to do this. Like, he's Jason Aaron is made to write Conan. He's
made to write, like, old warriors who are kings. Like, because he did that a lot with Thor, too. And it just, it sings.
And to get sharks in there somehow.
He loves a shark. I love that about him. I'm also a fan of sharks.
So I really enjoyed his Conan run that he did with Asrar a while back. And then, you know, he left the book. And so I was really pleased to see him come back to sort of this. And the first issue, like, I enjoyed it, but I thought the second issue really left me with what's going to happen next? How's this?
Yeah, the second
go?
Issue was better, I will say. It the first issue, you know, Conan gets shipwrecked on a really rough and tumble island out in the Western Sea and is confronted by both his Thoth Amet, the sorcerer that he often... or Thoth Amon, the sorcerer he is often at odds with in his adventures, and then just a whole bunch of zombies. And this issue picks up with the two of them kind of having to have a uneasy alliance to escape all these zombies, while Conan also reflects on his time as a king and his time raising his son, Khan.
And the conflict, and I really, that was the part that I got into, was the flashback, and I kind of forgot that we were in the present on another one. You know, but the conflict between, like, do I take care of my kid or do I teach them how to deal with a difficult world? And that, you know, that basic question of parenting, which we all are thinking about all the time. You have a little baby and you are thinking about it. And I have, you know, an adolescent kid, and a younger kid. And I'm thinking about it all the time. Like, do I want to help them here or do I want to be like, get it your damn self, and which is better for them? And it's a constant, you know, and put in the context of Conan, who, you know, is an all-time badass.
Was born on the battlefield, literally, and rose from being in a clan of barbarians in the far north to king of a great kingdom, and his son has been raised in the context of that kingdom, so his son has all of the benefits of living and being raised in court, which Conan, I think, recognizes on some level is good for him and is easier than he had it growing up. And then on the other hand, it's like, well, but how is this kid going to learn to make his way in the world if he's not pushed a little harder than he's getting pushed, even though his son seems like a good kid,
yes,
by and large.
And also, he has the exact same name as his dad, except they took an A out.
It's two N's, though, isn't it?
C-O-N-N. Con. Right. Just take the A. Take the,
oh,
take
yeah,
the A
you're right.
Out.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I didn't even think about it that.
I think the part that actually convinced me that Conan was doing the right thing was he was just like, well, what's it going to be like when he's king? And I was like, ooh, that's a really good point. Because he won't have context.
Did you read the Duncan Egg novellas set in the Song of Ice and Fire universe? This had similar vibes to that, where it's like a kid who may or may not end up as king one day has to live amongst the common people in order to understand them better. Mm-hmm. They're actually good novellas, Josh. You should check them out if they're available on Audible or whatever. And I liked that he kind of cast his son out of the kingdom and said, like, no one's going to let you back in this kingdom until you've earned it on your own. Get going. Which is, on some level, cruel, but it's the way, I don't know, it's Conan's best attempt to be the dad that he thinks this kid needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you're always going to feel two ways about it.
And then it ends on a lava ape.
Yeah, well, that's a little classic comic book stuff right up there with the sharks. And, you know, and then as we cut back, you've got this weird thing where, you know, the sorcerer and Conan were in a battle to the death and it was, you know, cruel and they hated each other and whatever. And then they kind of have to team up. And I, the whole time I was thinking, is Conan going to have, like, is he going to, like, do the hero thing and help the guy? And he did. And I was like, I don't know if I believe that.
So the thing about Conan, from what I understand, so a guy I knew back when I was, you know, we were all going to cons all the time and hanging out with people. There's a guy I knew who's a Robert E. Howard scholar, like a legit scholar of the guy who created Conan. And the idea behind Conan on a fundamental level is it sort of happened when Robert E. Howard was living in West Texas and the oil barons were coming in. And his observation was that the people who are coming from the big cities with all the money were actually less honest, less trustworthy, less quote unquote civilized than the rough and tumble Texans who, you know, my word is my bond, handshake agreement kind of folks. Mm-hmm. And so Conan is sort of a reflection of that. He's like this idea that even though you come from this rural area and you're considered a barbarian, you still have more honor in you than the civilized, than the educated, than the wealthy, than the city folk. So that's sort of, I think, a fundamental component of the character that we often see play out, where like if he says he's going to help you, like you may not like the way he does it, but he's going to help you.
Right. I was there for that conversation. Like as soon as you said he's a Robert E. Howard Scott, and I locked in, I was like, go on. I don't really know anything. I know the name Robert E. Howard, but that, you know, and I understand that there were novels, but I don't know anything about it.
He's a tragic figure, really. He was pen pals with the guy who did Cthulhu, the racist dude.
I have no idea.
Lovecraft, H.P. Lovecraft. Oh, okay. He was pen pals with H.P. Lovecraft, and was probably a closeted gay man, and eventually killed himself. And it may not have something to do with his sexuality, but I think like the fact that he created like this big sexy lumbering barbarian dude is not a coincidence in that context either. So yeah, it's really fascinating sort of history and lineage of this character leading up to the story still being told today, I think.
It's interesting too, because then that can get interpreted because it's been passed on to so many people and have done different versions of the story, and like all of the subtext of one thing gets mixed in with the subtext of another. It's really interesting. So as we're looking back at this issue, did you read any of the Jim Zub Conan issues?
I did.
How were they?
They were good. Okay. They weren't as good as the Jason Aaron stuff, but no, they weren't bad.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan, so I skip past. But I was just really happy to see Aaron on here. But I was also really glad to see Mahmoud Asrar, because I think I remember when their initial run ended, it was like they'll be back at some point. And that was so long ago, I kind of forgot about it. But, you know, I remember Asrar. He showed up on an Image book, I think, for the first time. I want to say Dynamic. It was a Jay Ferber book.
The Jay Ferber soap opera book.
Yeah, and just since
Dynamo
then.
Dynamo 5?
Yeah, I think. No, maybe. I don't know. But whatever. He ended up on some X-Men books and just like. And he's developed into such a great artist. And also just perfect for this.
There are three pages in here that he colored himself.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just three gorgeous splash pages of Conan just sort of reflecting on his adventures, you know, fighting a Lovecraftian eldritch horror, you know, just getting it on with some women in a pile of gold and just fighting some dudes in a volcano. And I'm just like, oh, you were talking last week on the show about buying original art. If these pages were not done digitally, like somebody's going to have a very happy framed painting on their wall if they go and buy these.
I know he has at least a son, I think about my kid's age, maybe a little younger. My interactions with Mahmoud, he seems like a really good guy too. So it's always nice to see like talent match with, you know, being in the right place and a good dude.
I laughed pretty good at the page. Like we never really learned anything about Khan's mom, you know, whoever birthed him to Conan, and she's not really in this story. And there's a moment where they've, you know, won the battle, and Conan is just, he's itching for a fight. He just wants to get back in the action, but he's old and his kingdom is at peace and he needs to just let it go, but he can't because he's a barbarian. And he just kind of sulks back to his tent with a couple of wine.
He has ADHD. I don't know why that's not clear.
And he sulks back to his tent with a goblet of wine, and there's like four women just passed out in his tent waiting for him to get back. And it was so funny.
That's a common thing in barbarian camps, is that the women will just roam around, and it's like monkeys in certain parts of Thailand and India.
Or General Hooker in the Civil War. Do we need to do a little Civil War education here?
I think we should be careful that we don't go too far awry, because it would be very easy. There's one, two, four women. And they're not just like, they're passed out where they lay. Like they
exactly.
were.
Whatever happened before is still with them and they're recovering.
Yes, exactly. So it's been some shit that went down. It's just, it's good Conan, and it's got the context, the subtext of sort of these parenting decisions, you know, Aaron's got kids, he's got it. So yeah, he's going through it. He's putting in here. I don't know what the difference is between this and, you know, Avengers, which, you know, isn't terrible, but it's not connecting with me in the same way as this does. But it was really good to see like him just come and do some kick-ass issues and have more to go.
We're just dads talking about dads.
That's all it is. But it's other people pod. You can enjoy it too.
Runner-up for Pick of the Week was Daredevil Woman Without Fear, number one, story by Chip Zdarsky, art by Rafael de la Torre, colors by Federico Blee, and letters by Clayton Cowles. And speaking of having sexy times in your comic books, this is a hot book.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Did you read this?
I did. I got to say, it didn't make much of an impact on me one way or another. But I realize like I don't really care about Elektra. I don't know that I ever have.
This book, this issue, actually, I think, plugged me into her more than any of the Frank Miller stuff ever did. For whatever reason, the idea of a woman who just keeps beating her head against the wall, and the wall in this case is Matt Murdock, this just stubborn, beautiful idiot who cannot give up on his Catholicism and his guilt in a way that just makes no sense to her, but she just also can't quit him. I don't know. It hit a lot of good notes with me, and I was super into it. So,
I think it looked really great. I did like the twist of who the villain was at the end. It was not what we expected, because I'm reading the thing, and basically someone's after her or trying to trick her, whichever. And I just thought, please don't let this be Bullseye again. Mm-hmm. Please,
they were hinting that it might be.
Yes, exactly. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me, you're going to go. Because they just did her in Bullseye.
Right.
So I liked that it was the twist, but at the same time, that character I feel like I've also spent a lot of time with lately. So like taking one character's villain and moving to another book isn't exactly great, but it's fine. I get why he would do that.
And I always appreciate seeing Stick. I love that Stick is always just wearing that low baseball cap, just always kind of covering half his face with a baseball cap. For whatever reason, I find that just like no other comic book character has that look.
That's Sam Shepard.
Exactly, sort of. Yeah. Just world-weary sensei sort of
I don't
thing.
Get his point, though. Like, he doesn't care about her. He doesn't, like, he's training her to fight. Like, why? I guess there's probably stories that I don't remember. I'm not even gonna say I haven't read them. I don't remember.
And I liked that Elektra had the little coffee date with the guy they went to law school with. I'd forgotten that. I guess she was in law school with Matt and Foggy and all them for a bit, but didn't.
She was
finish.
A rich girl,
right? Exactly. And I really like the combo Daredevil Elektra costume. I think it's interesting looking. I like the way that it kind of flows and moves in ways that are a little bit distinct from either her normal costume or her modern costume or Daredevil's costume. And I love Asai. I think Asai is an awesome martial arts weapon. I don't love her blunted ones that she uses when she's Daredevil, but whatever, it's fine.
But that makes sense.
Yeah.
I do think that through the normal Daredevil run, especially over the last few months, she has been much more interesting than Matt Murdock. Like, that part of the story really, because she was doing things and Matt Murdock was just in a crazy prison.
She doesn't respond correctly to when there's a deer on the road on a snowy night, though.
Did she swerve?
Yeah, she sort of. She needs to spend more time in New Hampshire, I think.
Yeah, don't do that. I know many people who have. My mother has done it on several occasions where she just slammed into a deer. But I've never actually done that. Like, I've never seen one in the road that I had to, like, figure out what to do.
Do you have the thing on the front of your truck that'll just obliterate them instead of your
bull
car?
Bar?
Yeah.
No, but I never had a reason to put it on there until just now.
I mean, they are effective at preventing your car from being damaged, but they will straight up just kill anything you hit, including people. So I think there's some pros and cons there.
Well, you can get like a real one, you know, that is like sub $1,000, or you can get like a janky $200 one from Amazon.
Or you can get one from Australia that's made for kangaroos.
Bloody hell.
Her form on her size isn't great. I'll say that as a person who's done some martial arts with size before. That's not how you're supposed to use them.
I've heard you say a lot of nerdy things, and you just top-3'd it. Just so we're clear.
Well, I just finished season 4 of Cobra Kai, so I'm riding high on the martial arts train.
All right. Carry on.
But I enjoyed it, and I will keep reading it, but it sounds like you may not necessarily keep reading it. You weren't as into it.
Soured is too strong of a word. I have begun to lose interest in the Chip Zdarsky Daredevil world to a certain extent. I just think we've been going on a long time, and I'm not really sure what the point. I like the feeling that there was a story before, and now it feels like we're just doing a long run. You know what I mean? That has no end, and I don't like that feeling. Usually, I don't mind it over in the Fantastic Four for some reason, but in the Daredevil stuff. But I think Daredevil wears me out as a character. Like, he just, because it's exactly what you said, he's hard-headed. It's just he's just going to keep making these same mistakes.
You sound like a person in Matt's life. Like, you're just like, Matt, yes, for the love of God, literally, just stop.
So this book is a person who is like a codependent of Daredevil. I don't know. That's not super attractive. Now, it was good. It looked good. I will probably read the next one, but I'm not in love with it.
Cool. Or are you in love with Reign number one?
Reign number one probably would have been my pick of the week if I had it. I did not know what it was. I did not know what to expect. Joe Hill didn't write this. He wrote the story that it was adapted from. But normally his stuff is going to come out of it was DC / Vertigo. And then it was IDW. But this was from out of Image. And I had no expectations of it. And I thought, when I started, I go, it's going to be a horror movie. But what it is it's sort of the story of, we don't actually know a lot. It's the story of this one day in Boulder, Colorado. A storm came in, and instead of rain, it were these like razor sharp, I don't know, was
crystalline.
It? Crystalline knife spear things that came out, and they just killed everybody who was outside.
Was a little hard to read given the actual recent tragedy of the wildfires in Boulder, and obviously all of our, iFan
people
out there is it was not lost on me that like your town has experienced a real tragedy very recently, and that really sucks, and I hope everyone out there is okay. So it made it a little hard for me to read, having spent a lot of time in the Mountain West, but it's still really well done issue.
So, and it's a very small story in that sense, mm-hmm. though. So there's a girl and she's got her girlfriend. So the first person she's ever fallen in love with, and his girlfriend's really supportive and loving mother, and this sort of like weird, all the weird people in the neighborhood, the Russian stripper and the weirdos who apparently are outside in their neighborhood every day predicting that the end is nigh. And there's this really interesting little kid, and, it's just everything about it. It's not like the idea of the sort of this weird natural disaster or whatever isn't, but the way that it's framed in this really small story, in this really mm-hmm. small way, from characters who have distinct personalities, it really, really pulled me in, and it gave me just enough that I wanted more, but I didn't quite feel like it was just the cold open.
Because you could have done this like the 2012 disaster movie, right? Or San Andreas or something. You could have done it that way. This didn't. It kept it, even though it showed you what was going on in the rest of the world. I can't believe they killed the giraffes, Josh. They killed the giraffes. Not cool.
A huge target. I mean, it would be impossible for them.
Tall and narrow. They could have danced between the raindrops.
If there's any wind, any crosswind at all.
It's strange to me. It's almost, the story ends with like, what do I do now? And I get that, but I almost felt like this was a complete story and I don't know that I need to even see what happens next. You know what I mean?
I can see that, except for the fact that we've had no effect.
Yeah.
Like there's no, we had a cause and now we don't mm-hmm. We don't have an effect. So if I did, I mean, I guess if I had a criticism is that I don't really know what the story is because I feel like this is the kickoff event. But I guess that feeling that I had of not being given enough is what you're saying. There's a bit of a short story to it and the sadness and loss, but I just think there's more to be said.
Yeah, I can see
art,
that too.
Art by Zoe Thorogood, who I have never seen before. I'm a little, I don't know exactly how to describe it, but it was very unique.
It has indie comic vibes for days. Like it just felt like if I was reading an indie comic from the early 2000s.
But at the same time, like the craft was there in that I knew all the characters had been drawn differently enough from one another that, I was never confused. I knew who every single character was. For whatever reason, the introduction of the characters and the differences between them, it has, I feel like there's cartoonists I could compare it to, but it's almost like there's elements of it rather than it reminds me of a person. So like the wide shots, I was getting sort of a Nick Patara vibe, but then the characters themselves are not that.
A little Nate Powell thrown in there, I think.
Yeah, I can see that. Very like interesting, evocative coloring. The colors during the part before the rain comes is a different, is sort of a golden, yellowish kind of thing. The when the danger starts, the pink shows up in the panels, and then it's sort of greenish and bluish as the storm comes through. and then it lightens up a little after the fact. But like literally the colors throughout, by Chris O'Halloran, I'm sorry, I don't mean to tell a story also as I'm sort of looking through it. So that's just, it's one of those subtle effects that they can do to tell a story that I thought was used really well. And then, you know, like the reality of the things hitting, the needle shard things, is pretty gross.
Yeah, like, it was graphic. It was really well done in terms of making it scary.
Also, the I got to give credit to the lettering on that. Like every time they hit something, it's like stab, 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 tat, tat, tat. And there's no panels where that's not happening. Like the sound effects are sort of everywhere in different sizes.
And the needles are they're like small enough that you kind of think, oh, well, you could take a few of those and be okay. Mm-hmm. And it's just it's the volume.
Yeah.
That brings people down in a way that's really kind of horrific.
I found it really compelling. And also, you know, I'm not going to discount the fact that, like, I just didn't know what it was. I had no idea what to expect.
That's fun, though.
And usually that's not good, is what I'm saying. Like, you know, most comics aren't good. It's true. And if they were, then it would be. Yeah, well, but he didn't write this. It's just based on a story from him. He did, like, he didn't script the thing. In fact, he did a short story, I think, in prose. And so everything else is, you know, so the craft of it, how you tell the story, like they had a good skeleton to work with. But you
listen,
still
we all watched In the Tall Grass on Netflix and agree that it was a great adaptation of a wonderful story we all enjoyed and loved. So, you know, anytime you adapt in Joe Hill, it's going to be fine.
We don't all feel that way because I've
Patrick
never read
Wilson's
a Joe Hill
book. In the Grass, everything's fine.
All right. I don't watch anything horror related or nearby. So I don't know from nothing. And I figure if his name's on, it's a horror story. Is this a horror story? I don't even know what this is.
I guess we'll see. I think we need another issue to know.
Yep. Really liked it. You should check it out. I'm shocked it wasn't like the patron pick, but whatever. Batman and Robin number 3.
Batman and Robin.
Number 1. Robin and Batman. You're right. It's ingrained. Robin and Batman number 1 was a pick of the week from me, which I believe surprised at least Connor. And this is just a little 3-issue story about Dick Grayson coming into himself. Like understanding who he is, you know, trying to work out being an adolescent whose parents have died, who's working for a sociopath, who has affection issues and huge parent issues, trying to prove himself and get his adolescent testosterone under control and be sure to be himself. All of those things and done really elegantly by Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen. And I really like the first issue. I pretty much like the second issue, but I thought that they really brought it home in the third issue. And I love a good 3-issue miniseries. It is just right to not hang around too long with this kind of story. I think they got that part correct. You know, the idea is that Killer Croc in this version, I don't think this is canon, but what the fuck do I know, was in the same circus as the Flying Graysons, but he was like a freak in a tank, and he watched them be happy and fly around. And that's why he killed Grayson's parents. And now he figured out who Dick is. And he wants to get revenge on him. And Robin's got this thing like, oh, I got to go take care of him. And they keep going, you're not ready for it. And he goes out and he does it anyway. And, you know, he wins. You know, Batman's in the classic trap where he's tied upside down and the water is rising. You know, and he wins the day by being himself. And... you know, it's like this beautiful, beautiful Dustin Nguyen, you know, I don't know if it's actually watercolors, but it's watercolors. It's almost like, it's like the most good looking but unfinished comic book art you could possibly have.
I knew I should know this, but I couldn't remember, like, where do Killer Croc's powers come from? And he was literally just born that way.
Yeah, I don't know.
Crocodile Man.
I don't even know if that's consistent, though.
Is it? Okay, yeah. He's a weird Croc is Killer Croc's a weird character to me. I kind of like this version of him better than I think exists in the main DC continuity.
Well, it's one of those things with those animals, the animal characters. So you've got like
the lizard.
The lizard was the other one I was thinking of, and he gets done all sorts of different ways.
Yeah,
you know, there's is the lizard about the savage animal inside all of us? Is that what mm-hmm. Killer Croc is? Is it about, you know, like? People, is it a person who when you I guess that's also the savage animal inside us, but it's a different version. Like, you know, when you peel back everything, you take away the civil, you know, they're just people who don't care.
Or is he a person who's been kicked his entire life and this is him, now he's strong enough to do the kicking.
I mean that's more relatable and more, well, I don't know, that's not even true. I kind of like the fact, like him, I think Clayface is another one of those. A lot of these sort of...
Or is he just a cold bastard because he's a reptile and he doesn't feel, you know, reptiles don't seem to feel emotions the same way mammals do. Like it's, you know...
That's less interesting.
Yeah, because there's no story there.
Unless it's man versus nature. Mm. You know, like there's a way to do it all over the place. So, but I guess the point is like, there are certain mid-tier villains, they've been around for a long time, that can kind of be all of those things depending on the whim of the person doing the story. Because we don't, you know, like the Lizard gets written a bunch of different ways. Croc gets written, Clayface, you know, there's all sorts of things you can do with it. And I think that leads to the interesting, like if they did them the same every time, if you were like, that's not how Mr. Freeze is, then it would get old a lot sooner.
Yeah. I mean, Mr. Freeze at least has a super consistent motivation most of the time.
Right. Right. But we don't, like, he always shows up in a different, is he rageful? Is he calculating? Is he actually really not a bad guy, but he's driven to do this thing? There's all sorts of ways you can go at it. And I've really come around to the A, being aware of it, and B, sort of appreciating that, like, do it that way. You know, they do it with Joker too, but I'm so sick of Joker. Like, it's.
Yeah. For a guy with a villains roster bench as deep as Batman's, you don't need to keep going to Joker.
It's 60% Joker.
The man who is not looking forward to the Batman movie at all, with the Riddler, said out loud on a podcast.
I didn't even know. Like, I know there's another Batman movie, but I couldn't have told you. I didn't know.
They're doing like the Riddler if he was the Zodiac Killer, and it looks dumb as hell.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah. I remember.
Give me Frank Gorshin or give me nothing.
When. Jim Carrey, which one's the Jim Carrey?
Batman Forever with Val Kilmer.
I walked out. I wasn't like in a movie theater. They showed it at school, like at college, like at one of the rooms where they would show almost new movies. And I watched
a second run.
Yeah. And I watched it for like 10 minutes. I was like, I'm not doing this. I can't. Because I had seen the commercials and thought, I'm not doing this. And then when I actually sat down to do it, I was like, I can't do this.
But did you get the commemorative glass mug from McDonald's celebrating the release of Batman Forever? My old roommate in college had some of those. So I used to
I was Batman. Batman 89 was my jam. And so this was anathema to me. It was just, it still is. I don't understand it. Like, I think I would get it. Because, you know, because when I was a kid, you're like, no, is Batman supposed to be serious? Which isn't true, and I'm fine with that part, but it's a bad movie. It's a bad movie.
Well, it's also like there's a way in which the Adam Westbrook Ward Batman knows its camp and plays with it in a way that's fun, whereas Batman Forever, it just didn't seem to understand what itself was in a way that the actors in the movie didn't know what they were doing, you know, what they were supposed to be doing.
Right. No, and I was like, well, that's not the Riddler at all. That's just the Joker in a different costume. And so is Two-Face. Two-Face is just the Joker in a different costume. This is terrible. Anyway, this has nothing to do with anything. I really enjoyed Robin and Batman, all three issues, but I thought the three, like, it you know, and I've read versions of this story 1,000 times, but, you know, it was done really well, very sensitive.
Classic for a reason.
True enough. Hey, folks out there, folks, listen, folks. I don't ever call anyone folks. I don't know why that's coming from. That feels like a... some sort of podcast tick.
Folks is good. It's non-gendered.
If you like to, because fellows is gendered, so that's not, listen, fellows. You come from academia. They must have said fellow all the time as you sipped brandy and you're.
I've been a fellow several times.
Oh yeah, I didn't know there's actually a title. I forgot about that part. Hey, if you like this show, this really goes for anything that you listen to on the internet that is listener supported. But for us specifically, there's patreon.com/ifanboy. You can directly support the show there. You unlock shows that everybody gets to listen to. There's Talksplodes, Booksplodes, Mediasplode. One just came out this last week. Be part of a great community over at the in the Discord servers, or apparently in the Facebook. Apparently, there are still good things that happen on Facebook.
To take over the Facebook? I'm still on. I don't like using Facebook, but I'm still on it. Technically,
we could have this conversation another time.
Yeah, let's have it in front of the viewers.
They're not viewers. Anyway, I don't know, as we get into the new year, as we keep looking at sort of the state that the world is in, I cannot help but be stunned and amazed when people. Support the show directly for people you don't know. Actually, sometimes people you do know support the show, and that's even weirder. I'm like, it's okay, you don't have to. But, you know, it's just this, like, a generosity of spirit and sort of just an appreciation for the work of others that really goes a long way right now into helping me not hate every single thing that walks. So thank you for that. That went to a different place than I expected.
Things for cool people.
Yeah. iFanboy.threadless.com. You can find t-shirts and sweatshirts and other kinds of shirts and then other items with 12 designs we have now up there. 12 of them. Our newest design is, gosh, the good old superheroes, which is just beautiful and brilliant. I'm saying that not because we did it. I'm saying that because the designer, Tio, just killed it on it. Same thing with the Clint is Dead shirt and many of the other things that were done by other people. But they're the shiny new things. And you should check those out. Get a phone case. I keep waffling on which phone case I want to get with those designs because I'm going to get one. I just haven't sorted it out yet. You can not deal with any of that. You can go to ifanboy.com/support where you can find a direct donation to the PayPal link. If you feel like throwing something in our digital virtual tip jar, I guess it's not virtual because it's actual currency, but who's to say what that is anymore? And finally, ifanboy.com/...
You're not a crypto bro now, are you, Josh?
I don't know enough to tell you. I know that I mistrust it. That's what I know.
So you're saying don't donate through the blockchain? I don't know. I don't know either.
Okay, yeah, if you don't get it and I don't get it, then there's something suspect. I kind of understand it, but not enough that I would
sus
try to
is what
it.
The kids are saying.
I wouldn't say that either. You can go to iphone.com/Amazon. You can find a general link to Amazon, and you will always see a link to the pick of the week and the books on Booksplode. But also, we are partnered with bookshop.org. They help out local bookstores, and they will find the links on our. You'll find those links where appropriate on our show. So we're trying to make sure that that not only Amazon gets that's the bulk of sales. So we're selling stuff through there. Bookshop.org is a fantastic organization. So they're going to be part of our links and affiliate links on the site too when it comes to buying books. So we're happy.
I did all my Christmas shopping through Bookshop.org.
Well, that's excellent. That's excellent. I have so many backed up books that I don't buy a lot of books lately because I really have to get through.
Well,
this.
I was buying these for other people. So
right,
was,
right, right. You know people who read books? No, it's a joke. Let's move
I
along.
I came out really much sadder than I intended to.
Everybody I know is my age and they're usually parents and shit. So we all just are like, are you alive? Yeah. Okay. Do you have time to read? No. Except for Connor, who just reads 1,000 books, and he sends me a bunch of books. Then I'm like, these are probably great books because he's wonderful at picking out books. But
my wife also reads 1,000 books. It's insane. Yeah. Library app. It's great. Your local library probably has an app.
Access to the material is not the issue here.
That's true.
That is not. I mean, I am at any point in my house surrounded by books, and I wouldn't have it any other way unless there was a fire. But
so you're just living and kindling, is what you're saying.
Basically, yeah.
Justice League versus the Legion of Superheroes, number one, story by Brian Michael Bendis, art by Scott Godlewski, colors by Ryan Cody, and letters by Dave Sharp. Did you pick this one up, Josh?
Nope.
So you're just fully at the point where you're not even a Bendis book. You just let it go right past you.
I didn't even notice it.
Okay.
It wasn't a conscious decision.
I think it's really interesting how into the Legion of Superheroes Bendis is getting. I don't always enjoy the stories. I think tying this one into the Justice League made it a little more accessible for me, except I didn't realize that Black Adam is apparently on the Justice League now.
Yep.
I don't know if that's a thing they're doing because of the movies. And like Naomi is already on the Justice League. Shouldn't she be on the Teen Titans?
She just kind of was immediately.
I know, but listen, when they're teenage superheroes, they need to be on the Teen Titans. There's a structure here, Joshua.
I mean, it feels like Bendis, for whatever reason, is trying to make Legion happen.
Yeah.
And we're in it for a few years now. I'm not aware of a movie or anything coming up, so I feel like that is the place that he decided to make his niche, mm-hmm. you know, and is semi-successful, but it didn't.
And credit where credit's due. I think Bendis, for a man of his age, and he's older than us, is really still very adept at writing young people in ways that I want to give him a lot of credit for.
Emotionally,
mm-hmm.
but not literally.
Even a little bit literally, like the way, you know, the way that like the Legion talk to each other about like their feelings, it was reminiscent of some of the stuff from Mythic Quest where, you know, Rob McElhenney was just uh-huh. losing his mind at millennials. Like it was like that, but done earnestly.
Well, I mean, his kids have got to be in that He's got some kids in that area at some point, so he's, you know, obviously very empathic and intuitive to that kind of thing. So maybe that's what you're on about.
So yeah, the story is like the Legion and the Justice League both experience this weird, inexplicable darkness that pulls members of each team away to other times, and it's completely unclear from this one issue how they will end up at odds with each other as teams. It seems to have something to do with the Gold Lantern, who's a character I know nothing about. But at least they fixed, I will tell you, Josh, they fixed John Kent's hair in this issue. And that's important.
That's not nothing.
So that was really all I had to say about that.
Fantastic Four number 684. This would be the second part that wrapped up. I think it was Pick of the Week last time, but either way.
It was 38.
Yeah. 683. Mm. The revolution has begun. You either get on board or you get left behind. We're using legacy numbers from now on. The Wizard took the Fantastic Four to court, and this was the second part of that, where the adults in Fantastic Four learned how to behave while they proceeded with their case. And then Bentley, that's what it is, does some shit to win the case, and then there's a twist at the end, and we're left wondering, oh no, is he the arch villain now? But if he is, how come Dragon's okay with it? Dragon's not quite okay with it, but he's there with him. So we'll see what happens. Do we have a new supervillain? Do we have a new version of the Wizard? Who knows? It's a fun comic booky thing. It's Dan Slott exercising the exact sort of powers that Dan Slott should be exercising on this book, which is, I mean, I don't know if there is a better gosh book on the stands as consistently as Fantastic Four. It's just like, oh, this is exactly what I want it to be. And I feel like when I was younger, I wouldn't have appreciated it. But now, just every time, it's a joy.
Well, when you were younger, you didn't even appreciate Jack Kirby. Which makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, well, I didn't know to.
Just think about the kids today out there. Don't even know. Don't even know how much of their favorite mega movie franchise is based.
You know what?
On
I had a moment yesterday where somebody went by me, and this is going to shock you, wearing Patriots clothing, and I don't understand it. I mean, like I get liking sports or whatever, but I actually don't,
but that's fine.
The reverence, well, whatever. And I thought, oh, they feel about the Patriots like I feel about Jack Kirby. I literally have that thought, and it made me go, all right.
I was talking with a buddy of mine, and this is building off of that same concept, who was perplexed because he's like, I like boxing movies. We're talking about how great Creed is.
Sure.
And he's like, I like boxing movies. I have no interest in boxing. I was like, yeah, that's because when you watch a boxing movie, you get to know the characters, and then you care about the fight in the context of the characters. Yeah. He's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like, of course it makes sense. Like we're just storytelling monkeys.
Many people like the thing that doesn't have the story, but I guess they might know the story that we don't know.
Exactly. They plug into it in a way where they are invested in the arcs of these real people in ways that we just...
Well, it's like, I love sports underdog movies. They're one of my favorite genres. And, you know, it's like a disaster movies. The more formulaic, the better. It has to be good. But in sports documentaries, like Ken Burns Baseball is my favorite Ken Burns. I couldn't sit through a baseball game to save my life right now. But that's because it's not given social context and a story and blah, blah, blah or whatever. So, yeah, it's totally that thing. I've been watching NBA this year pretty into it. And people are like, well, do you have a favorite team? And I'm like, no. Like, I don't care who wins.
Yeah, that's funny. That's interesting. Well, speaking of that thing, The Thing, number 3, story by Walter Mosley, art by Tom Riley, colors by Jordi Belair, and letters by Joe Sabino. Are you reading this, Josh?
No.
This is a weird book. I don't know who this Walter Mosley fella is.
He's a pretty well-known author.
Of, like, prose?
You talk, and I will let you know.
Okay.
I looked it up, and I forgot since then.
Well, were you at any point ever hoping to read a book where you get some postcoital thing?
Nope. Not one time.
Then I guess you don't need to check out this issue because that is exactly what you get.
Walter Mosley is an American novelist most widely recognized for his crime fiction. He's written best-selling historical mysteries featuring a hard-boiled detective, E.Z. Rollins, who I believe was portrayed by Denzel Washington in one of his movies. I know the name. I've known the name for a while, but I just haven't read. He's an African-American man. He's 70, so he's been around for a while.
Many of the characters in this story that are ancillary to Ben Grimm are African-American, so that makes sense. This is just, it's such a weird book. So, like, in the first issue, Ben just gets real big mad about everything in the way, in the kind of rageful way that Ben Grimm has, that's like a completely distinct rage from the Hulk, mm-hmm. in a way that I always find a really interesting dynamic.
Yes.
And there's, like, this very shadowy, almost demonic, almost outside of reality figure who's decided, like, they're just going to fuck with Ben Grimm. And so they give this kind of messed up dude superpowers enough that he can like fight Ben Grimm and then just make him super jealous that Alicia dumps him. So he ends up dating this woman, this choreographer, African-American woman choreographer, and her ex-boyfriend just gets real mad at him. And they have like in the second issue, they go to this underground version of New York City that is, I feel like, pops up in fiction from time to time, but I always find a completely fascinating concept mm-hmm. of the underground city. And then in the third issue, like they're back from the underground city. And
so like that bar with the supermodels from Seinfeld.
More like the Neverwhere from Neil Gaiman, but sure. Yeah. and like, you know, they've got, Ben has teamed up with this woman that he went on a blind date with, and she's super into him. And they've got this kid who's clearly got something more going on. I think it's going to be revealed that he's like an Uatu or a part of Uatu's watcher race or something like that. And you know, like he, tells this woman, she's like, he's like, I don't want to hurt you. And she's like, it's okay. I like it rough. And then cut to the L-shaped bed sheets. So it's interesting. It's just a weird, wacky book.
I like it rough. Go ahead and play with that metaphor for a second.
Right. Cause he's craggly.
Do you think that if you read this book, you would know that the writer was a 70-year-old man?
No, actually, I don't, because there's like
interesting
stuff. The only suspicion I would have is some of the deep Marvel cuts, but like he's writing about dating apps in ways that feel authentically ludicrous. The deep Marvel cut is the Champion of the Universe shows up and fights Ben Grimm.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's kind of a I don't know, it's a weird little book. I'm gonna stick with it. I'm gonna see where it goes.
Let's go
to a corner.
To a corner, far, far away.
A long time ago and far, far away. Long time.
Star Wars number 20, story by Charles Soule, who's exclusively in the Star Wars business these days, as far as I can tell. Art by Marco Castiello, with colors by Rochelle Rosenberg, and of course, Clayton Cowles. You always know the letter. They're always holding it down. Talk to me. Why'd you add this? Why are we on here?
I have been enjoying Charles Soule's run on Star Wars. It's weird. I don't know how you feel about this as in terms of it being like canonical to the films, because I have such a hard time imagining these events taking place in between the movies and like thinking about, I can't for the life of me think about turning on Return of the Jedi and envisioning any of these events having happened to the characters since I last saw them in Empire Strikes Back. Am I making any sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, but it's weird to me that I still enjoy the story, even though I don't really, I don't believe it.
I think I feel exactly the same way. It's high-end, officially sanctioned fan fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want it to affect the movies. And so even though it is, I guess it is officially canon, this is now part of the story.
Right.
But I'm not. There are Star Wars stories that I have read in my past that I do consider when I watch the movies to a certain extent. So we're talking about some of those earlier novels from the 90s. Mm-hmm. I guess the Zahn stuff happened afterwards. Shadows of the Empire, I guess, is the one that I'm thinking of. And then some of the Tales of the Bounty Hunter. I kind of think of that stuff in terms of... But I'm not letting anything else in. Like, I don't even think of the, you know, any of the movies, any of the six movies or however many actually, as being real.
Yeah.
You know, in that sense, we're talking about the original three movies. Those things stand on their own. And so then this is just, it's jazz. It's just like, let's play within these and do some cover versions, and you can do a really, you know, really good and you can have fun with it.
If this is jazz, I feel like J.K. Simmons in Whiplash, where I just want to be telling Charles Soule, not quite my tempo. Not quite my tempo.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, it's such a tightrope. Star Wars, I mean, this is anything really, but especially Star Wars. Like, you know, Connor and I and Ron have talked about this, is that this is, Star Wars is pretty much the same as religion.
It's the closest thing we have.
It is. And so your interpretation of that in the more Protestant version, you know, is what it is. It's your relationship with your God. And, you know, he can come in there and play a thing. And but really, the interesting thing about it is how he's going to interpret it, not is this right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So in that context, I enjoy the Star Wars books. I don't know.
I do too. And
I don't know what the legacy number on this is, but it's higher than 20.
And in this issue, Luke essentially goes to a planet of mushrooms and gets high and talks to a Jedi in like the Jedi version of Black Panther's astral plane with the ancestors. That's kind of cool. I don't know. I just dug it. It was a good conversation.
I it's funny because he goes in, he has this conversation with a Jedi, and I expect it to go arch. I expect it something to happen, and it kind of didn't.
Yeah. Jedi was just kind of a cool dude.
It was like a guy who was, like saying, you don't have to do this.
And he was the youth pastor who turned the chair around and says, hey, listen up, kids.
Yeah, but he meant it. Like, he's like, you don't have to do this. And I thought, oh, he's going to try it. This is going to be a dark side trick, because that's what every other story has been. But really, it was just saying, you know, just because they're saying you're a Jedi and you have some of this, like, you don't have to do this whole thing.
Right.
And, you know, then he has the hero's moment. He's like, yeah, I'm doing this, because that's what Luke would do, as opposed to anything that happened in the eighth movie.
It's
sorry.
I have mixed feelings about the, it feels like a retcon that everyone's come around to say, like, oh, the Jedi always sucked. I'm like, no, they didn't. The Jedi were cool as hell. And I have a hard time with that sort of, it feels like they're making excuses for movies that just didn't tell the story as well as it could have been told, if I'm being as charitable as possible. And I kind of like that Luke still believes in the idea of being a Jedi, and that to me is important to him as a character.
It's the one place that I think I can stick, not the one place, because I think you've got Star Wars, Superman, that kind of thing, but it's one of the places that I can go with the sort of, like, no, I don't want to look at the other side. I don't want to look at, I don't want to compare it to reality. I don't want to see, like, yeah, but what about how the Jedi negatively affected other communities? And like, I don't want to do that. I want them to be the good guys, and I want the Empire to be the bad guys. I don't need nuance in this case.
I have a really special relationship with characters who are heroic and competent and try to avoid violence, and I've always admired that about Luke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good.
So yeah, this was an enjoyable Star Wars corner. Thank you for joining me in this corner, Josh.
All right. Those are the books that we wanted to talk about. We're going to slide along quickly now. The pick of the patron pick is the patrons get to vote. That's another thing about being a patron that's rad. They pick on the book that they would like us to read and talk about. And this week it is Savage Avengers number 28 by Jerry Duggan, art by Patrick Zercher, colors by Hava Tartaglia, and letters by Travis Lanham. More Conan.
Yeah, we're going to start the show with Conan and end with Conan.
Conan and Kang. That's not nothing.
How does that feel when you say it out loud?
It's almost like it's trying to stack too many things. It's like, yeah, it's pizza, but it has Oreos on it. Well, hold on. Is that a good idea?
Ungapachka.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
I think it's a Vietnamese or a Thai term for when there's just one too many things. Mm-hmm. A hat on a hat, you know.
So I don't believe this was that.
Oh, it's Yiddish. Sorry.
We have here the sort of end of the long Savage Avengers arc, I think.
Which neither of us were reading.
No, but I did drop in a few times here and there. Once was a patron pick, and then another couple of times was I got, you know, like I would say I've read four of these. And I kind of enjoyed it, but then I'd go the next week and I'd be like, I don't know what's going on. I don't care.
Yeah.
But the stuff that I dropped in on when I was sort of able to grasp it, I did enjoy it. And I kind of liked that we were reading. I wouldn't have known otherwise to sort of read the end of the Conan saga in the Marvel universe proper. And I thought it worked. I don't really know how we got to this point, but I understood, like, okay, him and Kang have gone back in time to stop the villain from being a villain. And originally it was, would you kill Hitler? And then it turned out to, like, well, what if we change things? And it was, I'm going to teach him how to be a warrior as opposed to becoming an evil sorcerer. And it seemed to work, but then there's because Kang is involved, there's backtracking. And they are setting us up with the fact that Conan is, like, the most badass of all. He's, you know, like, he out Captain America's and Batman's everybody. Like,
he's well, and that's kind of, yeah, that's kind of a gimmick of Conan. Like, he's just, he's unstoppable, he's undefeatable, he's indefatigable. And I like the part of this that did work was that Kang actually has begrudging respect for Conan.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of dug that.
Yeah.
My absolute favorite moment is when the kid has to shoot the deer and he's only got the one arrow. And he asks Conan, you know, would you have let me starve in the woods? And Conan just takes a beat and says, we'll never know. And I was like, oh, that's good. Mm-hmm. That's good, Conan.
It was easy to get this mixed up with the King Conan because there is like
a lot of father-son stuff.
Yeah, and the kid basically looks the same, you know. Like, yeah, it's,
it does.
So it's a little confusing, you know, but...
Are you... how are you on your Kang saturation levels these days?
I'm fine.
You're good? Okay. Because it feels like we're getting a lot more Kang than we used to.
We are, and it is gonna hit a tipping point, especially when whatever the MCU version of it is comes in and it changes Kang. But what we have right now is a lot of classic Kang. Like, he still mm-hmm. looks like Kang. They haven't given him, like, a newer, updated leather suit. A lot of people are getting Kang right. I think that what we're doing is a lot of people have had some Kang in them, and they've been holding on to it for a while, and now is the time. You know, it'd be better maybe if it was spread out a little bit, but, you know, none of it's been very bad. It's all been kind of fun. This is fun Kang. You know, he comes back to his... He's got his Kangstantinople.
That was so... I did laugh out loud at that. It was so dumb.
You know, and he's got everything there. He's beaten everybody. Is that Cable back there? He's got the Infinity Gauntlet. He's got the Maestro. You know, he's got the Red Skull's head.
I guess the other one is Logan.
Yep. And he... You know, and Conan had said the one thing you don't have my sword back there, but it turns out he does have it in a special room.
He also stole a fried chicken drumstick from the Avengers and put it in the Infinity Gauntlet.
Fried chicken is delicious. I don't know what to tell you.
I don't. But it's crazy to me that he didn't finish it. That's the wild part.
Well, that's how you get to be the conqueror.
I guess so.
Sitting around eating chicken.
Self-control.
So he looks at the sword and he notices that something has changed in the past where he... Conan had scrawled on his sword, "This isn't over."
I don't think Conan's literate.
Of course he is.
No.
He probably picked it up while he was in the 616 universe.
Maybe.
And then there's a nice little essay, because God forbid you do a comic book that doesn't have an essay. But I liked what Jerry Duggan had to say about his thinking on Conan. And then there's actually one more page that I'm very glad that I didn't quite miss.
Yeah.
Because Kang then goes back, or brings him back. No, he brings him back.
I was a little unclear, but yeah.
No, because he says, welcome back to 2022. And then, like, they're going to have a fight, but it kind of ends just on that. It's like, oh, this will keep going, and it's ongoing. And
but it won't keep going for us because we're done reading it, and now we have to rate it.
Yeah. You want to go first? You want to rate?
Ratings. Yes, I will go first. I will give this a 4. It was
4.
Pretty good.
Four, it was. It was pretty good. And it was all the better for, like, not having had read everything before it. I totally knew what was going on. I was I was never lost one time, you know, and it didn't rely. It was just good storytelling in that way. The art was good, not amazing, but, you know, I was like, that's Kang. Got Kang right. I feel like it's hard to get Conan wrong.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the one thing that all comic book people start with.
Well, especially because, like, most comic book characters are drawn as if they were naked and their costume has been painted on. And so to have a character who's functionally naked most of the time just makes it easier, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, 4. Are they done with this series?
I don't know.
All right.
I'm going to go look at a comic book news site.
Well, either way, as a sort of story, 28 issues is pretty good for an arc. And, you know, think of how bad it could have been to put Conan on an Avengers team.
Oh, it could have been awful.
Yeah, and it wasn't. So
it's
the right mood. So that is that's the patron pick for the week. Thank you for the patrons for voting and for giving us a fun issue to read. Now, every week, we thank a few... Can you tell that Connor always runs the show? And I don't. Like, I'm color commentary guy. I don't do play-by-play. Every week, we thank a few people who have supported us at patreon.com/ifanboy. And we give them dumb superpowers. And is there any way I can convince you to go first while I think?
Yes, you can, because I thought of one ahead of time that I'm real proud of.
Okay.
Do you want me to go with the name I've been assigned or the first name in the list?
Go with the one name that you're assigned.
Power that D.V. Villeneuve,
the director, Villainui. Yeah, sure.
Hopefully I'm saying that right. Apologies if not. They have a really amazing power, and it's that whenever they need to, they can manifest a map as a tattoo anywhere on their body.
Oh, wow.
So, like, if they, and it'll fade quickly if they need it to, but, like, if they're lost somewhere in a city, they can pull up a map on their stomach and look down and figure out where they're going.
Okay.
Any map. It doesn't have to be real. It can be fictional, too. Like, Middle Earth, you got it. You need to see Middle Earth on my palm? Here it is.
I mean, it kind of sounds like just a smartphone.
Yeah, but it's a tattoo on their skin.
Right, and he doesn't need a signal.
Yep.
To do that. All right.
So any map they need, or just okay. For fun, just as a party trick. They just can pull it up.
Trevor Williams can take anything that is a big enough platform to stand on and turn it into a hovering device, magic carpet, Silver Surfer surfboard, hoverboard, these kind of things. He can locomotivate.
So it can both hover and propulse?
Yes, yes. You can turn it into his little personal vehicle.
Have you been watching the Boba Fett shows? Is this a Star Wars thing?
No. My son got a hoverboard.
Oh.
And it's much harder for me than him.
And then, Trevor. Trevor got it.
No, Trevor, but he doesn't even need to buy, he doesn't need to look through all the listings of all the various no-name Chinese junk and wonder if he's going to get screwed when he buys a hoverboard or to buy the Segway brand, which costs a lot more, but is probably more reliable. He doesn't have to do that because he can just be like, me and this coffee table are taking off.
Is there an upper limit, an upper threshold? Like if he's on a cruise ship, can he hover the
cruise ship? No. It's a personal, it's like for him to stand on. So, within reason, I'd say, he couldn't put other people on it. Maybe like a dining room table.
If he was in a car with Clark Kent, would he be able to tell if Clark was really driving the car or if Clark was just flying the car using his powers?
I don't think he'd know.
Because that was we had a big discussion in the Discord about that.
I don't have time for that. I can't. My mind started going and you hear that pause and I just thought, we're over. We can't do that.
Okay.
It's not a good idea.
Even though we're over, can we do a question?
You're in charge of this one, my friend.
Okay, let's do the second question. How do you feel about that?
Sure.
Blake Chastain from Chicago, someone I frequently interact with on Twitter. Hello, Blake. Says, hi there. Love the show. Question about Neal Stephenson. Since you're both fans, Blake, what you might not have known is Ryan here, also a fan. And a bit about mental health, since Josh has been open about his own experiences. I'm curious if you've ever stopped, avoided books or other media because of stress or other mental health reasons. For instance, I started listening to the audiobook of Seven Eves in March 2020, just as the pandemic and lockdown started. The unfortunate timing led me to stop listening because I simply didn't have the bandwidth. I'm sure as longtime podcasters whose creative work is tied to weekly releases, you feel the need to be timely and have to balance that with other parts of your life. As a fellow podcaster, I'm continually impressed by and thankful for your work, Blake.
So it's a good question.
It is a good question. I love Seven Eves. Seven Eves might be, it's one of my favorite novels that I've ever read.
It has replaced or tied Cryptonomicon as my favorite Neal Stephenson / favorite book. Like, I love it that much. And I actually, after the pandemic started, I think, I downloaded the audiobook of it just so I could read it again. And I felt the same way, if not so. I understand completely what you're saying in terms of like this as a pandemic thing and don't want to read it. I would say to stick with it because it becomes a whole other thing.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's many things all at once. But yes, to answer the actual question is, I think at some point, Connor had a pick of the week and I forget what the book was, but it was Jeff Lemire. It was just about a guy who was stuck in his life and he was
sad. The Maze book?
Yeah. And I just thought, I don't want that. I can't do that.
I think my answer is actually no. I don't think I've ever stopped consuming a piece of media because of mental health reasons. And I haven't talked about it as openly as you, but I've obviously had struggles with my mental health too. I think everybody does at some point, if you're being honest with yourself. And it's never led me to not consume media. I'll say part of me actually likes feeling emotionally affected by the media I consume. Like the not the Expanse book that just came out that was the end of the series that I loved, but the one before that, something happens to a character that I actually cried reading the book.
Same.
And I actually have a hard time even thinking about reading that passage again without crying. Mm-hmm. The final issue of Why the Last Man will get me every single time.
Yeah.
I was actually talking to James Syme at Isotope about it, and apparently he started just putting tissues in the final issue of Why the Last Man and selling it with the tissue, which I'm like, oh, James, that's such a you thing to do, and I love it. But in terms of like something actually being tough for my mental health to watch, Don't Look Up got me pretty good.
I laughed at that like an idiot because it was so...
But like as a scientist who actually knows about climate change and a scientist who's done like worked with policymakers and uh-huh. tried to teach other scientists how to do policy work, it was infuriating.
I can get that. I think that it's not like a thing. I think depending on my mood, and I use that in a wider term, from time to time, I will avoid types of things, but they tend to be the types of things that I avoid anyway. I don't generally like stuff that where there's no characters that you like.
Yeah.
Like I don't like watching stuff that is all about horrible people, but of course there are exceptions because funny.
Right,
funny always trumps that. So, you know, my favorite comedy shows are that, but that's because it gets to be really funny. So Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Seinfeld, Veep, Arrested Development, Succession.
Have you finished the most recent season of Always Sunny?
No.
The finale will make you cry.
I'm sure. The last season was amazing. I cannot have time to get on all that because I could for a long time. But, you know, in that way, but I'm trying to think. Like, there's certain shows where it's just nihilistic about the world. I'm thinking of House of Cards, where I was just like, what's the point of this? Like, everything is so awful. You're showing me a version of everything that's awful, and it's not funny. Not like Veep, which is
why Succession has to be a comedy.
Exactly.
It can't be a drama, otherwise it'd be too depressing.
Which is why I didn't watch it at first, because I thought it was just a drama, and I thought, I don't want to see that at all, because it's too real. It's actually relative. You know what? You know, in terms of pandemic stuff, like, I hate when the pandemic exists in TV shows. I don't want it. Yeah. I also don't like, it's been like 20 years now, so it's still ongoing, but like, all through the 2000s, there were a lot of movies about the Gulf War that was ongoing, and I was like, I don't want this. Like,
But you love Three Kings.
It's a comedy.
That's true.
I did, but also, it isn't making... I don't know. It was good. Like, there's always an exception to it. But, like, anything that's, you know, I can't watch very special episodes or movies about people with Alzheimer's and dementia. Mm. I literally almost got choked up talking because I can't do it because I don't think that there's any lesson to be taught.
There's a movie coming out, A24. It's an adaptation of a play called The Humans.
Uh-huh.
Don't go near it. It wrecked me in the theater. I saw it at the Kennedy Center here in DC, and I saw it with a guy who knew some of the cast, so we went backstage afterwards, and the cast was all just like laughing and putting on their real clothes, and I was just like, how dare you not act like you just put me through something?
Yeah.
I was so mad at them.
I genuinely, like, I've always said this about that specific issue, is I don't know what the point of it is. Like, we all know it's awful, especially anybody who's been through it. Like, I don't need to be told it's awful. I know it's awful. I don't need to feel a simulacrum of that emotion, which is terrible. And that was before I even went through it. Now that I've went through it, fuck that. I won't do it.
The other side of that coin is like shows like The Wire, which seem very bleak and dark, I think are actually incredibly hopeful shows.
Well, it's hopeful in the fact that like it shows you the humanity beneath all of the people. And so that makes you think like, oh, we're all stuck in this together as opposed to us against them, maybe.
Yeah.
Because there's charming criminals, there's charming cops, there's asshole criminals and asshole cops. And, you know, like, oh, Christ, we're all stuck in this, you know, this cycle. And you know, you'll just be the best person you can within that. And that's, you know, it's all in the game.
I think just like garbage reality TV is probably bad for my mental health. And I will get sucked into it. I'll get sucked into it if I let myself and I have to.
I won't. I can't deal with it. Because that's actually a thing where, you know, pandemic, stupid people. Stupid people are killing us, and reality shows are about stupid people, and they're made, I'm sorry to say this, but they're made for stupid people. And I don't mean that you're stupid if you watch them.
And they're about like encouraging stupid people to behave worse.
And then giving it to you in the most packaged, formulaic form possible, which is what makes them compelling and makes them easy. It's junk food. I fucking love junk food. I can't do it in TV form like that. But we are very far away from anything that... It's a good question, but I'm sure there are things, but I guess what you're saying about Seven Eves, but you know what? I have a black enough sense of humor that, like, we watched, is it called Pandemic? What was the Soderbergh movie?
Outbreak? Contagion?
No. The Soderbergh movie about that with Jude Law, and like it was basically exactly what was happening. Like, we watched that right when this all started, and it was funny.
We watched the quarantine episode of Always Sunny, which caused us to do an Always Sunny rewatch, which is fantastic.
I'm taking my wife through it. And now that we've gotten past like the 11th or 12th seasons, it's getting really brilliant, and she's super into it, so it's good.
Thanks for the question, Blake.
Good question. Good question. I'm sorry that we went on so long, but really should find time to go back to Seven Eves. It's
so good.
Yeah, it really is.
One of the most powerful page turns in literature that I can remember is the moment you know what we're talking about.
Oh, I got chills. I just literally got chills. Like, it's going. My scalp is sort of tingling. Hey, so you can write to us at contact@ifanboy.com. You can also write in for the Media Splode. It's helpful if you want to write Media Splode in the subject line, so we can do that. This month there will be a Talk Splode. I have to set that up. It's already halfway through the month. How'd that go? There is a Media Splode that just came out this past week, where we talked about the end of Succession this last season, and we talked about Get Back, the Beatles documentary, and some other things we went through. There's a patron hangout on January 29th. Where we will be hanging out for an hour, and those are two things are brought to you by patrons, and one of them is for patrons only. Next month there will be a Booksplode on, ready for this, the new Teen Titans, the Judas Contract, the new edition. That's
classic.
Yep, but it's the new edition with Bobby Brown. And was Bobby Brown a new edition? I don't know. So check that out. That's some George Perez goodness. We're in honor of the great man.
Oh, yes.
Who's still with us.
So sad, but so awesome.
There will someday be a Spider-Man No Way Home show, but there isn't one now. Yeah. And then finally, Connor and I appeared on the podcast Can I Say Something, hosted by iFanboy patron Damian Sherman.
What was the answer?
We definitely said something.
Oh, good.
We said a lot of things. We said enough that afterwards, Connor and I texted each other, as is normal, is to say, did we sound like assholes? And I was like, I don't know. Probably.
And it's that level of insight that makes you better than the people on Always Sunny. Not the people who make the show, but the characters as portrayed.
I'm way into the podcast right now.
Oh, it's so good. I also have a podcast called Science Sort Of. It's probably not as good as the Always Sunny podcast, but you can listen to it if you like things that are science and things that are sort of science.
I don't know how you're keeping up with that.
Not well.
You can find all of our old shows and all the writing that's been done on the website, and some of it's even good, or at ifanboy.com. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. You follow at ifanboy on Twitter and at ifanboycomics on Instagram. You can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan on Instagram and at Ryan Haupt on Instagram and Haupt on Twitter. That's H-A-U-P-T. I never know how much to say the P. I feel like...
I usually tell people to pronounce it as if you were saying how, like the question with a P-T on the end.
Haupt. It's like one syllable, but some more.
Yeah, I respond to almost any pronunciation of it. Just don't, except for the one where they tell me I killed the Lindbergh baby.
Haupt. Oh yeah, you did, didn't you?
He was a Hauptman, but still.
Well, we don't know that. we don't know. You can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy and keep up to date with the old video show reuploads. We're just on the minis now. The full length shows are all there, so if there's ever been a video show that you've been like thinking, hey, what about that one, it's there. You just got to find it. Don't ask me, I don't remember. This past week was the new comics preview for July 23rd, 2008.
That Connor is such a completionist that the new comics preview minis are going back up.
I mean, you understand, obviously, as a person, like, I think it's ridiculous, but I mean, there's no point in telling him, like, hey, why are we bothering with this?
Because
he would look at me like an alien.
If everyone who's listening to the show right now went and watched it once and just jacked the numbers up, I think that would be hilarious.
Really getting that algorithm. If everybody who went and listened to this show, it wouldn't even make a blip on the YouTube channel of my kid's favorite Minecraft gamer.
To like and subscribe.
They wouldn't even notice it. Oh, I hate how they talk. Hey, click everyone. Hey, guys.
With all that said, if I never hear "with all that said" again in my life.
San Diego Comic-Con 2008 preview is the other one, which is also
if you dig the show and you dig our descent into madness and old age, you can leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also, you know, you can go to platforms where you don't actually listen to the show and you can still probably do that rating or review. So just copy paste it all around the internet. Have fun with it. But what's even more important than that, tell your friends, tell your mom, tell your kid, tell your letter carrier about the podcast. I bet letter carriers get through a lot of podcasts in their day. Although whenever I see them, they always seem like they're on the phone. They must have more friends than me. Anyway, help us spread the iFanboy love. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Ryan. I'm Ryan.
I'm Josh, and I'm just thinking about letter carriers right now. Like, I know what I would do, but maybe they're more extroverted. They get to go to everybody's house, bring them stuff. I can't. There's too many things we haven't had. You bring up a lot of thoughts in me, and I appreciate it and don't appreciate it. We'll see you next week.
What about feelings, though?
I don't have a lot of feelings left.
All right. Well, stay safe out there.
Bye, everyone. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.